Welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Sykes.
Well, good morning. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
On that news announcement, the issue of GME, GameStop, being up 70%. He rounded off the numbers. It was only up 67, and that's for the day. And that's not year to date.
That's for the day.
That's right.
That's hilarious.
So nothing to get excited about, excuse me, until you happen to look at the year to date return, which is over 2,200% in a month.
Well, that's not bad. That's not bad.
Well, GameStop has just proven that what most of you who are listening to our show are using as a fundamental theory for building your portfolio, modern portfolio theory based on what is referred to or properly named as the efficient market theory.
Efficient market.
Yeah, it says that, and this is the foundation of your portfolios, folks, that every price in the market is the right price because everyone has all the information readily available and they will always make a rational decision on every buy and sell order.
Everybody's always looking at their own self-interest and we're going to make logical decisions. And so prices reflect all known knowledge about what's out there in the market and they are correct. So that GameStop price is correct for what was a nearly bankrupt, really horrible business model business. It should be, you know, a multi-billion-dollar corporation now.
So if you had any finance class in college, you were introduced to the efficient market hypothesis or the efficient market theory. And this pricing issue is one which I have argued since the tech bubble, when the tech bubble imploded, it took 2.5 years to unwind all the hot air and all the speculation that was in it. That was just to reach bottom, not to get even. No, that took 15 years to get even. But I argued, said if the efficient market theory is correct, then all those people who paid top speculative dollar in 2000 and 2001 for those tech stocks that had no business model was correct, then there's nothing wrong with them falling 90% over the next couple of years because those prices were also correct. Now, they can't all be true. So GameStop is just the second big run to prove that the efficient market theory should be referred to as market efficiency myth.
It absolutely,
I just made that up.
It's absolutely accurate. There's no difference between what's going on with GameStop right now and what was going on with a lot of the tech stock back in 2000, who had nothing more than a great URL. And so this company is going to be fantastic. You've got a .com. That means you're going to make tons of money. It doesn't matter if you don't have a business plan. You don't have a business. You have no way to make money. You had huge valuations. They're completely disconnected from reality. That's what's going on with GameStop. It is completely disconnected from reality. It's disconnected on purpose. There are people driving that price on purpose, but the company does not reflect what's going on with the share price.
So what GameStop does do on the other side, while it disproves market efficiency and the underlying foundation for modern portfolio theory, a Nobel Prize process developed by Harry Markowitz in 1952, which 80 to 90% of everyone's portfolio is based on. GameStop, on the other side, proves momentum theory. Now, there are a lot of arguments in the academic world that try to undermine momentum investing. But there's actually academic study that says this works. We just don't understand why. Well, I'm going to posit a theory here. The butterfly effect. Now, you've never heard of the butterfly effect in stocks? Well, of course there is. And we have to go back to how it's basically taught. For those unfamiliar with the butterfly effect, it theorizes that a catastrophic event such as a tornado can trace its roots all the way back to a butterfly flapping its wings a week earlier. And it just created a ripple effect that grew upon a ripple effect that created another ripple. Pretty soon it was a tornado. Just took a week and one tiny little butterfly. You don't believe that? Okay. Well, let's go back to the momentum issue. What is happening with momentum and why would we call it a butterfly effect? It's basically the function that somebody starts buying a security, somebody else recognizes it, and they tell their trading buddy. He looks at it and says, hey, that's a good deal. It's going up. I'll buy that. It basically, it becomes a self-fulfilling activity until you run out of buyers. And then the momentum effect stops. The tornado has arrived and it crashes. But there are academic studies that show if you will simply buy something that is moving up and hold it for 6 months and rotate, continue to keep that six-month cycle moving, you rotate from industry to industry, sector to sector, depending upon where the money is flowing. What we have talked about over the years, and those of you who have called us in recent weeks and opened accounts have told us, you've been listening for years, and it suddenly, you know, this stuff is beginning to make sense. and you're saying to yourself, after you've been with us, man, why do we wait 5 years to do this? You know, this makes more sense than anything else that we've seen. Well, I've read some studies. I've read a lot of studies. But when we take a look at this six-month rotation study, it proves that excess return above buy and hold in the S&P works. I mean, instead of an average return that's somewhere between 9 and 10, the study ends up generating a 12% return. And it basically centers around the idea that most investors chase recent performance, which becomes a self-reinforcing buying mechanism, the butterfly effect. Tech prices did that back in 98, 99, and 2000. Well, 97 to 2000, because 2000 was the peak where we kind of ran out of buyers. There were enough followers that it took a year before the collapse actually began in earnest. But we, at that time, we had stocks that were collectively traded at more than 100 times earnings. It means it's going to take 100 years for them to make enough profit to pay for the price that you just paid for the stock. And you know, unless that's your life expectancy, it's not usually a good call.
It's not. It's important to remember. It's not just companies like GameStop. It's not just companies that are small companies that no one else is interested in. Just take a look at Tesla. There are no metrics that justify Tesla's share price. Nothing. You know, they would have to be making well over $1 million a car that they sell to justify their share price. There's nothing there. It's all a bet on Elon Musk and what's coming. You know, whatever's coming, like you said, down in the future, well, we're going to be okay because he's going to keep developing new things. So it's just a bet on a person's ability to produce future returns, but there's nothing there right now. But no one complains about Tesla. GameStop, because the hedge funds were shorting it. Now they had their positions blown out by a bunch of Reddit users. Now it's a big problem, but it's the same thing. It's the same thing. It's a company with absolutely no justifications for its share price because everybody just keeps piling on. And that's what momentum is. It's things start going up, they keep going up. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that as long as you're paying attention to it, because there's going to become a point in time when it's going to be time to leave. And you have to be alert and ready to move when that time hits, because they won't last forever.
And that time occurred for us this week as the market was collapsing. As of Friday's close on the S&P 500, it is back to the December 17th low. 100% of January's gains, which are year-to-date gains for the market, for the S&P, are completely gone. And the return is a negative 1.113% for the month and year-to-date. And all of our models, all of our client models are positive year-to-date. And I did check before we went on the air that the model we demonstrated for 401k accounts in last month's webinar is also positive for the year. So what we do in terms of risk management can be challenging in a market which is irrational, and that's basically what has happened this week. Irrationality showed up, and part of what happened is the hedge funds that were getting squeezed out on the GameStop play ended up having to sell positions that they really wanted to hold, but they had to raise money to cover the losses they were taking on GameStop in order to buy the stock. I mean, that's maybe we'll get into the process here. I do have some notes, just kind of a five-step note about how this process works. But the hedge funds, as I told one of our clients who called in and say, what on earth is going on and why are you guys still holding anything? Well, we were in the process of liquidating stuff, but we can't tell anybody what we're doing until it's done. But what was happening in the market here was very abnormal. And that's what I told the client. I said, this market is not normal, and it is messed up all sorts of data, and it's a challenge to figure out where we are. But by the end of the day, everything that we own, with the exception of our concentrated model, which still does have a couple of positions that have been holding up, and we ended up with a substantial out in performance across the board with our models on Friday.
On Friday, yeah, everything we sold at a profit. We weren't getting out because we were losing money. We were getting out because we're preserving gains. And that's a huge difference in the way that your portfolio works going forward. Instead of having to make up again for the losses that you waited to incur, once the market turns, you hopefully get to sell those at a profit. We don't always do, of course. No one does it all the time. But yesterday, every position we sold in our two primary portfolios, every one of them went out at a profit. And that's a great indication of how this works. And, you know, on Thursday, most everything was still hanging in there. They were close to sell signals, but they weren't. And then by Friday, now we're there. You know, everything hit sell signals. So you act on that. You make a move and you make the change, and that's how you preserve capital.
Well, and that's why most people have a hard time with anything other than buy and hold, because they don't pay attention. They don't have time, or they don't feel like they've got the knowledge to do that, or they won't spend money on the tools. Some people are very price sensitive, and I mean, they have a fixed cost, and they said, that's all I'm going to pay. I don't care if you've got a better deal. I don't pay that much for the deal. And the net result is, where opportunity is, they're willing to leave the door closed instead of open it. But that's an individual decision. I watch my wife when she shops.
Hey, Don, we're going to have to get out of here. We're late.
We're on a break.
We're late. Okay. We're late for our break. Yeah, we'll continue.
We haven't even given our phone number yet.
No, we'll do that right now. If you want to talk to us this morning, feel free to give us a call at 888-312-5757. That's 888-312-5757. We'll be happy to talk to you about this crazy market and what's going on out there, what you can do about it to lock in some gains that maybe you're worried about disappearing before you get a chance to do that. And I'd like to remind everyone, we do have our next market update scheduled for February 6th. All about the market and the economy and what's going on. It's a great place to get a second opinion. We can show you again how it is we do this, what it is we do for client accounts. You can register for that at iriradio.com. That is at iriradio.com. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, and know when to run.
never count your money. Never more true than this week. You have to know where your limits are. And as Perry said just a moment ago, the reason for the sales were, this thing doesn't make any sense, and we're getting pushed. Let's preserve the profits that we have in those positions and take another look on Monday. We were really close to making a rotation from what we had into areas that were showing more strength. So it actually happened to be coincidental that the two issues came up at the same time. If you want to talk to us today, it is 800-312-5757. You want to talk to us during the week about more direct issues with regard to your portfolio, we can do that too at 800-317-9119. We do have a webinar coming up next Saturday. You want to sign up for that, go to irradio.com. That's irradio.com. Lower left-hand corner is the webinar. A couple of clicks. It's a webinar link. It's not the webinar itself. The webinar link. Couple of clicks, your email, and you will be set to join us. We've been talking about the mythology of an efficient market. I mean, I have talked with CPAs over the years who said, I don't want to know what you guys do because the market's efficient. I just buy and hold. Well, you buy and hold through 15-year periods of recovery as it was coming back from the tech bubble, or 7 or 8 years to get back from the financial crisis. In the 08, 09 meltdown, which actually started in 07, but nobody talks about that. It's the rollover that begins. It's the butterfly effect. It just starts slowly, and it slowly rolls over. It kind of erodes, and then it bounces, and you think, no reason to worry, until you wake up one day and you look at your account, and it has just collapsed. You have to know when to pull the plug. Take the money off the table and move on to your next position. And the hedge funds this time around are just a replay of what happened back in the late 90s with long-term capital. Long-term capital were a bunch of academics who had read all the theory. In fact, they'd written many of them and had received Nobel Prizes for their academic work. They understood the treasury market. They knew how prices worked. And when they didn't work the way they were supposed to, they just borrowed more money because they knew they were right.
They can't be wrong. This is, the market can't do this. We know how this works. And so we're just going to double down on our mistake here. But we're going to win in the end because we know we're right. We've done the math. We know we're right.
Until the market proved them wrong, they were bankrupt, and the Federal Reserve had to step in and give them money to stay alive, so that the banks that they had borrowed from did not go belly up.
That was the first too big to fail. They were too big to just let them collapse. They brought together a large group of people because they needed billions of dollars to bail them out. And it was all because, academically speaking, we can't be wrong here. The one thing they do not account for in academia is that the market routinely does things it's never done before, and that can really throw a wrench into plans that are built on any sort of history that says, well, this is the way the market works all the time. It just doesn't work out that way.
Well, and those guys had a direct line to the Fed at that time because they'd written a lot of theory, academic papers that the Fed was using for building their models and stuff. This time around, these are just hedge funds guys, Wall Street guys. Some of them probably have a call to a line to the Fed, but the Fed has not stepped in at this point in time. Other hedge funds have. The Melvin, I don't remember the rest of the name of this hedge fund. We just call him Melvin.
That's the guy's last name anyway, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he has this big hedge fund, and he's betting on the collapse of GameStop. So what's the big deal? This company, all of its product is now available online. Why would anybody go to the store to buy a video cassette when you can log on to multiple sources on the internet for the same show? So this company is brick and mortar. I mean, it's dead.
They're not online. You have to go to their store to buy physical video games. It's like, okay, long term, it's a non-starter. They can't continue.
So they're on the verge of bankruptcy, and he just shorts the stock. Well, some of the game people like gaming, said, we'll show them, following a researcher publishing on Reddit, and they just simply collected a whole bunch of followers who bought the stock until it forced the hedge funds to have to step in and buy stock to cover their massive, massive losses. And Melvin would be out of business if he didn't have some friends who lent him some capital
with deep
to
pockets.
Stay afloat.
He wouldn't have made it out of this at all. But he had to borrow billions of dollars to cover his position. He made the mistake of going online. He went online talking about his short position in GameStop and said, "Hey, this is because he wanted people to go with him. You know, let's get everybody to sell this, and I'm going to make money on the way down." And exactly the opposite happened. It hit Reddit, and these guys said, "Hey, this stock is not very valuable anyway. We can move this thing around. Let's all go buy this." And that's what happens all the time. I mean, big fund managers routinely, you know, get on all the finance shows and say, "Hey, this fund should be in everyone's 401k. Everyone should own this," to get people to go buy it. Well, the Redditors did the same thing. They just happened to bury a not just one, but a few hedge funds.
So there is a clear signal of insanity in the market. Not the least of which is Elon Musk. I'm not saying he's insane, but given that WhatsApp, which is a unit of Facebook, doesn't have particular concerns about your privacy. And just in case you didn't know, Facebook is a way to let the world know every little idiosyncrasy that you ever posted and then some more.
What you're having for lunch today.
Yeah. So Musk didn't like their privacy issues. So he suggested in a tweet that people should use Signal instead. Well, now, Elon Musk, I mean, what's he have? 4 million followers. I mean, I'm sorry, 41 million followers. That's enough to let people know that you've got an idea. So a whole bunch of them went out to buy Signal. What's Signal? Well, it is an alternative to WhatsApp. But when you go looking for Signal, what most of them ended up buying was a different company, Signal Advance. But it still says Signal, right?
So still, you know, says what's, Signal, yeah.
Not quite
the same thing. Not quite what they were looking for, but that's where they went.
But did that stop anybody from buying Signal Advance? Of course not. So last Thursday, it was at $3.76, an increase of 527% from the day before Elon Musk tweeted the one word, Signal.
you know, Don, we've had pretty good days. We've never had a 500% day, though.
I've never had a year like that.
That's a big day, yeah.
But did traders realize their mistake? Of course not. So Friday, it closed up at 719, which is another 91%. Certainly, investors would figure out that they were in the wrong stock. Nope.
And they did. They did figure it out they're in the wrong stock, but that was okay. It didn't matter. When it gets right down to it, it doesn't matter what the stock is. Is it doing what we needed to do? And yes, it was. So it's like, okay, this is not the stock we thought it was, but we're driving this baby through the roof, and we're just going to ride this for a bit. It doesn't matter if it's the one we were looking for or not. That's the way this works on social media.
So the company went from a worth, a capitalization of $6 million before Mr. Musk tweeted his signal, to $739 million. So last year, this thing traded around 50 cents a share.
50 cents.
And it closed up at $5.55. And with that, I'll bet you feel you're missing out on something.
Well, that is such a great illustration of what can happen out there these days. That is a super significant change that's happened in the market, and I don't think it's a change that's going to go away quickly. There are too many people that are now, we had record numbers of new brokerage accounts opened up in the last year and a half, more than have ever been opened up in the history of investing in the United States before. Those people are all online. Those people are all going through all of Twitter Finance and Reddit and other places, and they are banding together and making these things happen. And there's a couple of things that people really need to acknowledge. Number one is there's a real sense of belonging here. This is a real group. And the other thing is they're having a blast. That doesn't look like things that are going to vaporize quickly. And it doesn't matter that this Signal Advance went from, $3 to $70, and now it's back to $5. It's that, well, we got to go on that ride. And in fact, we did that. And they did. And that's something that we're going to have to all come to grips with, because that can happen anytime now. And as near as I can tell at this point, there's nothing that any of them did that's against the law. They all got together and decided, hey, let's all go buy this stuff. People do that all the time, and it's just that it's a new venue, and the breadth of what happened is bigger than ever. You know, we were talking about how those small investors sometimes make up 25% of the traffic in the stock market on any given day. It's never happened before, and now they're here. They're organized, and I don't think they're going away anytime soon.
Well, they're not, and the sell-off this week does not mean the bull market's over, but we did have a bit of a breather here. It may continue into next week. We have said over the last several months that you can't understand why the market, the S&P and the NASDAQ, are as high as they are, because the earnings do not justify it. This happens to be what we would qualify as a frothy market. There's lots of speculation in here, and that speculation has shown up in some of these companies that are on the verge of bankruptcy. So the market, S&P and NASDAQ, have been trading at a price range that only occurs historically about 2.5% of the time. That's a rarity.
It's very rare. Don, let's talk about that when we come back. We're late for our break again here at the bottom of the hour. We're going to come back, keep talking about this market, keep talking about the new drivers that are pushing this market around right now. In the meantime, I'd like to remind you again, we do have our next webinar on this market coming up. We're going to show you during that webinar what it is we do, what it is we're looking at, and how we manage client accounts to try to preserve the gains that you get. And then how do you get back in? Where do you see the strength coming back in the market? How do we look for that? We're going to cover those things in the next market update. We also have plenty of time for your questions. If you have questions about even individual securities in your portfolio that you want to know, should I hang on to this? Is this something I should add? We'll be happy to give you a second opinion on that live on the air. You can register for that at iriradio.com. That is iriradio.com. Just go to the webinar page and give it a click. You'll get an email back, and you will be good to go for February 6th, right after the show. You are listening to Investor Resources here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
So I'm telling you right now, only the strong survive. Only the strong survive.
Hey, well, that's certainly true. When stocks are moving in such big swings, it takes a stomach of steel to handle that. Well, I mentioned in the first segment we'd touch on just exactly how this process happens. And when you short a stock, there's two things that are coming up here. One is you see this stock, GameStop in this case, and you're saying, this company's going bankrupt. It's on the verge of bankruptcy. It has to file, and its business model stinks. It's going to collapse. I'm going to short the stock. How do I do that? I don't own it. So I borrow the shares from my broker-dealer, which means once I've borrowed, I am now on margin. I owe somebody, the company, the broker-dealer, my custodian, the shares. And I can't do that unless I have money in my account. But I borrow from my broker, and I then sell the shares. Now, I don't own the shares. They're a loan to me. So I just place an order, sell them. I'm expecting the company stock to fall. And when it does enough, I sell the shares that I borrowed. I collect that money, and I now give the shares back to the broker dealer. And the difference between what they were when I borrowed them and the lower price when I sold them, this is the buy low, sell high, done in reverse. That's all it is. There's nothing illegal about this. And I get my return out of that. But when somebody else jumps into the game and the stock price goes up instead of falling, the more it goes up, the bigger my losses, because I still have to give the stock back to the broker. I don't own it. I'm holding borrowed shares. I have to, and the broker calls and says, we got to put those shares back in the other guy's account because he just sold them. This is called a margin call. And how do I cover that? I have to go into the market and buy the shares myself in order to get out of my position. This is just the problem that has happened. And it creates the butterfly effect that I talked about. It ripples through the market and you get these margin calls. Hedge funds have to step in and they're either selling or buying in order to cover their positions to avoid going out of business, which many of them came very close to doing. This does not mean that the bull market is over, but it may mean that next week will continue to be a bit challenging. You should, if you have any concern about what's going on in the market, register for next week's webinar, IRIRadio.com, IRIRadio.com. Lower left-hand corner is the place to start to register for next week's webinar. I can assure you that what little prep work I do prior to the week in advance is probably shot.
It doesn't much matter. You can't get ready early for these things anymore because the market changes so much between now and next week that if you did a lot of work on what happened this past week, it could all be worthless on the following week. So you're getting really updated information in our webinars.
So one of the things that normally happens when you have a lot of selling in the market is that the Federal Reserve, Chairman Powell, is expected to come to the rescue. This week he announced, before all this stuff happened on Thursday and Friday, he said, well, it is a long, long, he didn't use this song, but long, long road to Tipperary. It's a long, long road to economic recovery. I think we could change some lyrics in there and make that song work. But we're looking for some sort of signal that his easy money, let's call it an ultra easy money policy, is going to replace, stay in place for months. He actually said probably years to come. And given current circumstances coming out of the administration, both from Secretary of Treasury Janet Yellen, who's been in Powell's shoes before, and the new policies coming out of the administration, it's probably a very long road to economic recovery and employment. I mean, the central bank says we really don't have any choice to be accommodative.
They're not even looking at that right now. In fact, they want the economy to heat up. They're hoping the COVID's gonna recede, the vaccinations are out there, economies are gonna open up, and people are gonna go back to work, and the pent-up demand is gonna get into the market, and we're gonna see inflation bid up because there's gonna be more people with more money chasing the goods out there. And the Fed says, great, we don't even care. We're looking for some inflation and we can't get any. So we're hoping inflation kicks up. And when it does, we're not going to do anything. We're going to let this run for a while because we are so far behind where we should be. So there is just no signal from them that they're even considering changing their dovish stance on the economy right now, especially interest rates. And that has an effect on the rest of the market. When the quote risk-free return, the return on treasuries is virtually zero, that changes where people can put their money, and that alters the whole structure of the market, the return structure. And they're telling us now it's not going to change anytime soon. So, buckle up. We're going to ride this for a while, and we're going to be much, much more beholden to the fiscal side, what's going on from the economy, because the banking side and the economic side is going to be static for a while.
Which leads me to a conclusion about lifestyle that Mr. Powell and his other Fed presidents must live in. One, I'm convinced that none of them actually go to the grocery store themselves to see how much food prices have risen this last year. And they all have drivers driving them wherever they need to go. And I'm sure that when they stop for gas, these guys probably aren't even in the car. So they haven't seen what's happened with gasoline prices. And that may explain why they're not in those two price categories are not included in the inflation calculation that the Fed uses. They are volatile price indicators,
too,
but they're not
them, yeah.
They're not in the calculation. So they're looking for inflation in other places. And presently, they don't see them anywhere close. They do see slower growth. The extension of the Trump economy that President Biden has proclaimed would be continued is not happening when the Fed says it ain't happening. We should be aware of that, that he's going, Mr. Powell, being the he, said he would be patient with any spike in consumer prices because he's much more worried about falling short of a complete recovery and losing people's careers than inflation. Well, apparently he's not listening to what's going on in the White House about people's careers that are being massively upset on the premise that over the next 20 to 30 years, solar will work 24 hours a day. And it, you know, I don't know how he's going to stabilize the sun so we have 24-hour electricity generation. But that apparently is buried somewhere in the theory that nobody's explained yet. But the volatility here is probably here to stay for a little while. And it is going to be supplemented with technology advances that are occurring both in business as well as in the trading environment in the market. You should register for our next Saturday's webinar right after the show. That's our monthly stock market update. And frankly, I'm curious to figure out what it is I'm going to use to explain what's going on.
It's going to be interesting no matter what to try to get what has happened here encapsulated in a way that people can understand it and see it. And I bet we can get that done.
Well, it looks to me we might as well take our break. I've been late on the last ones. Let's do this one a few seconds early.
Here we go. Let's go ahead and get out of here. Last break of the morning here. If you've got calls for us this morning, we'd be happy to talk to you at 888-312-5757. That is 888-312-5757. If you're not getting our Week in Review, which is our weekly email a newsletter, comes out every Monday. It gives you a little update of what happened last week and what's important to look at and things you can probably safely ignore. If you'd like to get that, send us an email at help@iriradio.com. That's help@iriradio.com. Just put Week in Review in the subject line, and then we need your first and last name. And we'll get you in the system, and you will begin receiving that this Monday. It's a real good look at what happened topically this week, and we've got a lot of folks signed up for that, and people enjoy that one a great deal. Again, if you want to talk to us this morning, number here is 888-312-5757, 888-312-5757. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Lone Ranger.
Well, somebody needs to come to the rescue. I'm not sure that the Fed is doing that this time around. But if it continues to compound, I'm sure that Mr. Powell will put on his mask and come riding in to bail out those companies that look like they are under direct threat. But one of the changes here that's going on in the market, this is a massive shift in our economy. The assumption is often broadly made that we are going to move from carbon-based energy to green energy, and it's going to happen so rapidly that we can just discontinue generating gasoline, diesel oil, oil for the engine in your car. We don't need those anymore because we're going to be using green vehicles. In fact, the president has announced that he's going to replace 100% of the federal vehicle inventory with electric vehicles.
And that's why Tesla keeps going up.
Yeah, well, I don't think Tesla's going to be, you know, is that going to be the new presidential limousine?
Right.
You know, it has an extra one or two tons of steel on it just for bullet bomb proofing.
They do that indeed.
That's right. So anyway, technology is going to change a lot of stuff, and you raise minimum wage to $15. Even though it happens over a couple of years, what's going to happen is businesses are going to say, how can I put a robot in here? How can I automate this? What kind of equipment do I do so that my boxes get packed, sealed, and shipped without a human handle on them?
And a lot of those are ready to go. They're ready to fill in. They're not inexpensive, but they're less expensive long-term than employees. So that's the problem.
Especially at $15. I mean, the people who propose minimum wages never ask, is the person doing enough work to generate a $15 revenue stream and still cover cost of, say, things like the building, the benefits, the margin for sick leave? How about profit? Oh, you're just a little guy. You don't need profits. You have a bank account from which you draw money to pay your
employees.
Don't
worry about that profit thing. Oh, yeah, it'll take care of itself.
We do have a call from Spanaway. David, you are on the air, and of course you want to talk about GameStop, and we never brought the subject up today, right? What's your question, David?
Okay, I've got a working knowledge of how this system works. There's only 46 million shares of in the float out there. How are these people buying all these millions of shares? You know, it takes at least 2 days for a stock nearly to settle. How could you jump in and then be back out in 5 minutes? You know, and how does these shares actually get on the company books? You know, it must be a nightmare on taxes and stuff if you're in and out, you know, 3 or 4 times a day.
Well, you're right about
that's
that.
A
it
fact.
Does.
Yeah.
In fact, we aren't going to get it today, but one of our show prep articles here is that Robinhood traders are facing the tax man, who, because of their inexperience in the market, didn't realize that whatever gains they made require tax payment for a portion of that. That's a shock to a lot of Robinhooders. Part of the issue that you raise is that, one, it's illegal to have that excess float. If you're to be on margin like that, broker dealers have to have some actual stock in their inventory. The adjustment of who owns it, which account it's on, is all it's journal entries. So those are electronic. They're a portion of a second to get those things adjusted.
They happen on the fly, yeah.
That excess float, I think, actually comes because you can do this selling or the buying in the options market, which are derivatives. And that's an issue that the person, the firm on the other side of the trade has to deal with. So the fact that they have more shares in play than are actually authorized by the company is a problem. And that, I expect, is what the SEC will be looking at, and there will be some fines levied when the dust settles and most likely the price collapses, finally.
Right. It looks like there's 69 million outstanding shares, but a lot of that's tied up by the directors and institutions and these, you know what I mean.
Sure.
And,
well, yes, but those firms can lend their shares out and collect interest on the loan.
Right.
When they lend them out for somebody else to they borrow, you have to pay interest on it. So even though you are an insider and you can't sell your shares, you can lend them out and collect interest.
That was one of the reasons Robinhood gave for suspending the ability to buy more GameStop yesterday, or the day before yesterday, because they said they were running out of liquidity. That was the story out there. Quickly, Robinhood came out and said, no, that's not true, because they really don't want that to happen, because that means you really are in trouble. And they do have enough shares to cover everything they're doing, other than maybe some of the shorts that they think they may have. More shorts may have been sold than they have shares to short. So that's not legal, and the SEC may be looking at those. Otherwise, that's why the price gets bid up. All of a sudden, those shares become a real premium, and the price goes up and up and up, but they just keep buying them as soon as they become available.
Yeah, so that's a good question, but it basically we're out into the margin territory, and it'll take a couple of years for the SEC to get done with the investigation.
Believe it or not, that's true. It will take a couple of years.
Yeah, you know how fast government...
All these people in Robinhood had to have a margin account to be able to do this.
Correct. And like Don said, a lot of them were not buying the shares. They were buying options. And so then they're actually going to control many more shares, and then then Robinhood has to go out and buy shares to have a hedge against the options that they've put out, and everything just spirals up. That's what they're trying to do, is move as many shares as they can up, and buying options is the fastest way to do that. They're taking the risk for that, of course, and they're not going to get burned though until the share price actually collapses, which at some point it will, because they're going to run out of the greater fool, the next one to come in to keep buying.
I have game stocks.
How do they know what to put in the call option, though? I mean, I watched it by the minute. It was, you couldn't believe it. I don't understand it.
Yeah, it was moving. It was moving to the point where exchanges were having trouble. Everybody was. Even Schwab were like, hey, they had online execution problems, because the volume was so immense from all of the small individual traders that they couldn't handle all the trades at once.
Well, that's not just on GameStop shares. That was on everything. I mean, even when we were selling, the normal software routine for us to handle institutional trades was not working. We had to call and wait in line to talk to a trader to get clearance to execute our stuff. I mean, it was a unique experience this last week, selling some of our positions. Anyway, that was a great call, David. Thanks for listening. Sign up for our webinar. Go to iriradio.com next week, right after the show. We will be talking about whatever we learned this week and trying to explain it to you. I was looking at I have the chart of GameStop up on my screen here, and what it reminded me of St. Helens. Remember when St. Helens, prior to the explosion, an explosive top blowing off, is they had a big chunk of the side of the mountain that was growing and growing and growing, and Governor Dixie Lee Ray, she said, evacuate, this thing's going to blow. Well, I'm looking at this chart and I'm thinking, it looks a lot like that. It's kind of rising unexpectedly. Sooner or later, that top's going to blow out of that thing, and there's going to be a massive correction that comes.
Was that a call for a GameStop evacuation then, Don? Is that what
Well, if you own it, just be very, very careful.
You better be paying attention. That's correct.
The one thing that is changing is technology's changing around the world. As we said before, we had the call from David. It's changing business, and anything that causes the cost of labor to rise, whether it's a mandated minimum wage or it's a massive inflow of illegal immigration who will work for next to anything and off the books, it's easier for companies looking at their long-term operation to say, how can we automate this, put in robots? That reduces the demand for labor and increases the problems for economic recovery if you have a persistent high unemployment rate. We do not bet on that kind of event, but we do monitor it because it's going to impact the market. And we are concerned about that. As I mentioned earlier, we made sales, as Perry said, to protect the gains. We have gains in all of our models for the end of the month. That means year to date. But we were in the process of seeing things that we needed to rotate to anyway, because leadership was changing in the market. And that change in leadership is something that you must get used to if you are investing in the market. our 401k models adjust to changes. We update them every month. Our client accounts are updated on a regular basis. Our position is you own leaders and you get rid of laggards. If you own something that's not working, there's a point at which you need to get rid of it and protect your profit. We're going to explain more about how we do that in our next webinar next weekend. Register for it at irradio.com, irradio.com. It's too bad we don't have two more hours to discuss because we have plenty of material here.
Yeah.
Yeah, we could today, that's for sure. Talk to us during the week at 800-317-9119, 800-317-9119. And Lord willing, we'll be back next week. Have a great weekend.